When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Bingetown TV. This is Brian here with my co-pilot, Kyle. And today we're going to be talking part 8, the penultimate episode of the Apple TV Plus limited series, Masters of the Air. But before we get into it, a couple housekeeping items. I think the main takeaway is going to be if you were on our Masters of the Air feed, go on over to our Bingetown TV main flagship feed. That will have all of our podcast episodes as we drop them. And if you want to find them in a nice sorted library sort of arrangement, you can go on over to bingetowntv.com. That will have links to all of our socials, all of our backdated episodes. We just wrapped coverage on Avatar: The Last Airbender, the live action. We're working on Solo Leveling. Shogun is probably the one that we are really jazzed up about at the moment, but you can find that all on bingetowntv.com. So go check it out. But yes, part 8 of Masters of the Air. Like I said, this is indeed our penultimate episode, and we were kind of just talking about it. Not a lot happened, even though a whole hell of a lot happened. I mean, D-Day was this episode. We get introduced to kind of an entirely new cast of characters in the Tuskegee Airmen. So a lot did happen. But I agree with Kyle, was the one that said it. It didn't really feel like a whole lot happened. And maybe that's one of the complaints now that we are 8 episodes deep, that the pacing is getting a little bit marred or just has a weird feel to it as we kind of get into the end game of this series. But I'm going to hand it over to you, Kyle.
Yeah, I can't tell if we're like victims of our own expectations, maybe, where we're expecting second to last episode, very explosive, and all of these things need to happen type of deal. So it was a little jarring that we're getting introduced to all of these new characters. I knew from all the promotional materials that the Tuskegee Airmen were going to be a part of this.
Right.
So it was kind of, when were they going to get involved? And yeah, just like as a second to last episode, it feels like, again, you're supposed to kind of lead us into this explosive finale. So that's okay. I guess we were just maybe expecting more D-Day, maybe being a more explosive thing when it's really Crosby sleeping through it type of deal. But again, right, this is what actually happened. This is a true story. It's not something that's being created for plot and all those types of things. So I think we might have been a victim of our own expectations.
Yeah, and it makes sense the show would include D-Day, but Rosie says it himself, you know, we ruled the air. They were unopposed in the air because the past 2 episodes, their goal was to completely annihilate the Luftwaffe to clear way for this invasion of Normandy. So it kind of makes sense. I just think from a show perspective, this, they maybe could have ended the series on D-Day so that we could have had the 100th really going out on raids still, that kind of felt meaningful, or the intensity was still high. But instead, we're in the penultimate episode. I'm not even sure if we are going to see our main characters become opposed in the air going forward. And again, it felt really weird that they're just shoehorning in the Tuskegee Airmen this late in the game when they're cool. Yeah. I would have liked to see them probably introduced earlier in the series, especially since right from the get, they're celebrating 500 missions. So clearly they had a lot that they could have gotten into. And I think I've been a bit more vocal, but the past 2, maybe even 3 episodes have felt slow just at the Stalag. So maybe they could have taken away from that aspect, included the Tuskegee earlier and kind of fleshed out that storyline, because right from the get, I was really liking what I was seeing. And I mean, the name precedes them. Everybody has heard of the Tuskegee. It's a very enduring name and a famous group of pilots, of course, being the first African-American pilots in the Air Force. But this whole episode just gave me a weird feel.
Yeah, earlier would have been better. It feels weird to say, but we just haven't really been able to generate a connection with these characters. Ooh, excuse me as my alarm goes off. Probably set it for PM instead of AM. And where does that go? It's just, yeah, we haven't really made the connection so much with them, and now they're going to play potentially this big role in the finale. And while it's going to feel good still, because, you know, we're behind them no matter what, it just feels like, yeah, we're second to last episode, and then we're dedicating whatever it ended up being, 10 to 15 minutes to these characters that we've never met before, which we, like we're saying, probably should have met earlier. Maybe that's a historical timeline mismatch, but like you're also saying 500 missions. They've been out there. They've been doing stuff.
Well, I used the term shoehorned, and I feel like the showrunners really are trying to include this because, like I said, they're a very noteworthy group. You know, the first African-Americans, that is an interesting storyline to follow. However, I was reading a couple articles. They were mentioned on one page of the book, Masters of the Air, and then Kroz also has his own memoirs. He kind of introduces us to the Tuskegee Airmen through a narration. They were unmentioned in his memoirs, which makes sense because they were stationed in North Africa and later Italy, whereas they were in England in East Anglia. So over 1,000 miles away, these two wouldn't have really interacted together. So it all just had a weird feeling, but again, it was still good. Probably one of the weaker entries overall, I would say, but if you are done with the preamble, why don't we get into this?
Yeah.
The very informative setting tag opens the episode. We are in the outskirts of Rome, Italy. So thanks for being specific there. And this is where we get our introduction to the Tuskegee through a narration of Kroz, who just says, you know, while we were up in England hitting the Germans from the north, the 15th Air Force was hitting them stationed in Italy from the south, kind of giving a two fronts thing there. And the Tuskegee Airmen were a part of those efforts. And this was a really cool scene, if nothing else, because we get to see these fighter bombers instead of the traditional B-17s.
This is what I was anticipating, having known nothing about the series coming into it. I thought we would be following fighter pilots who would be doing these types of low altitude bombing runs and gun runs type of deal. So it was cool to get. I was like, oh, okay, cool. This is literally what I was expecting out of the show. So it was interesting to watch for sure.
Yeah, which kind of added on to my frustrations about them not being included earlier, because I would have liked to see kind of both of these ships in fleshed out combat, because we really only got to get familiar with our bomb squads. But, you know, the mission is a success. Small bomb squad of four of them. I think it is our boy Macon is one of the four. Daniels is there, and we catch up with the airmen at a celebration back at their headquarters in Italy. And we are introduced to this Alexander Jefferson character who's talking to his captain and kind of just lamenting while all of his fellow airmen are celebrating their 500th successful mission for the Tuskegee. He's like, oh man, you know, we're doing all this good stuff, of course, and I'm proud, but when are we really going to get into the meat of the action? And his captain says, hey, you know, just hold your horses. I think some good stuff might be coming, some escort runs deeper into Germany. And he even says we might be getting some P-51s.
Yeah, he came off as very Bucky, Buck Rosie like in here. Like just his desire to be a bigger part of the fight felt like I was thinking of him fitting in well. And then, spoiler alert, he does fit in fairly well, especially with Buck later on. So I like this character a lot. And it's just funny to again, we're getting, so this is potentially like, let's call it our third like mission control area. So we were in Iceland and then we were Thorpe Abbott's and then we have this. And it's just funny that there's always a full bar set up. There's always a wooden bar with a bartender and all of that stuff. I understand. It's just funny.
I mean, you got to keep the boys happy and morale high in those few precious moments where they do have time of leisure.
Yeah.
But that was actually something I read as well, when Jefferson has a reaction to the captain saying we might be getting to fly some P-51s. Those were the cream of the crop, as we kind of got shown last episode. I did see that the Tuskegee, which should surprise nobody because the military was pretty, you know, racist at the time. What's the word for it? Like actually racist, like the Jim Crow laws, segregated type racist. That's what we're dealing with here. They were giving kind of like secondhand P-40s. So the stuff they were being given was inferior to what the Germans were throwing at them, which is just putting more respect on their name to kind of overcome that form of adversity. They were in slower, harder to maneuver planes, but the prospect of P-51s would be very exciting.
Yes. Yeah, for sure.
So the next scene is just kind of two. It's a Colonel Davis, actually, who was a noteworthy figure, Benjamin Davis, talking to another captain, and they're kind of lamenting that in some of their previous missions, they didn't have proper fighter escorts, kind of just highlighting, like I just said, the racism in the military, the disparity, exactly. And then I think Davis also says, I look around and I see lieutenants that should be captains and commanders, etc. So again, this all really felt rushed and something they're trying to like highlight these injustices in one episode where they're only kind of a tertiary plot line, and it's just really not enough. So it's worth noting them all, but
yeah, I wonder, I'm not familiar, like we said, with World War II, like a ton of World War II media. There has to be, maybe there's got to be like documentaries or movies, or maybe that's something that we need. It's just more information on the, because you're saying it, you're right. It feels very obvious that they're playing this satellite role in the show, and it leaves you wanting more.
Yeah, definitely. And to speak to that, there was, within the past 10 years, there was a movie about them that was not positively received, but I think HBO had a documentary / movie a couple decades ago that was very positively received, which the article I was reading was like, you know, there is a want to see these people's stories instead of just shoehorning them in to the last two episodes. Though I digress, they were still cool while we got to see them.
I'm trying to think to my introduction, for the most part, to the Tuskegee Airmen is definitely the very recent debates over what the Washington football team should have renamed themselves. Yes. And all of the signs pointed towards something with the Tuskegee Airmen being a great name, and they just kind of went with the Commanders. So that's
I think they wanted to call them the Red Tails, like the Washington Red Tails, which they painted the tails, you know, it's pretty on the nose, painted the tails of their planes red. And
that's what it was.
I was all for that.
Yeah.
Honestly, Washington football team or the Washington Red Tails would have been better than Commanders.
Yeah.
Although
football team works surprisingly well.
Dude, it just worked really well. And we're Eagles fans, of course. So we would take any opportunity to poop on them.
Oh, that's good.
So the Tuskegee Airmen are assigned a mission. And this mission is to kind of clear the way for an invasion. I guess it would be on the southern coast of Europe, but they were going to be on a bombing raid of Marseille, Saint-Tropez, and Toulon. And they were going to hit some of the critical landing points to knock out the radar detecting systems that the Germans had set up, essentially clearing the way for an invasion force. And we have this long monologue where Lieutenant Macon, who is another great character, just kind of says, hey, I calculated the route. We're not going to have enough gas. And the commanding officer's like, yeah, it's going to be tight, essentially.
I like how when he said, we'll give you like IDs or whatever documents so you can try to blend in, and they literally all start laughing.
Oh, yeah. They know. They're like,
yeah. That was funny that they all started laughing. I was very curious what the reaction would be, and it was perfect that it was that.
Absolutely.
They're all looking at it, and I think one guy even turns to the guy next one, was like, good luck trying to blend in.
Yeah.
Like, that was good.
That is an interesting concept, though, that downed pilots or pilots were given fake documents in the inevitability that they were to be shot down.
I would feel better having them on me.
Yeah, so would I. But they knew it was kind of more a farce than anything for them.
Yeah.
It was one of the lighter scenes. So next time we see them is in the air, and their fighters are equipped, fighter bombers, whatever, are equipped with drop tanks. And we see one guy, his drop tank gets stuck. RIP Westbrook, but Macon kind of walks him through kind of jiggling his plane to kind of help it along and like dunk it off, which was really cool. And just showing his chops as a pilot.
I thought it was like a lever thing that he was trying to say, you need to push or pull. And he was doing it so hard that he was twisting his plane. And then I realized that they were literally just shaking their plane in the air.
That was crazy to me that the fix is literally just freaking hit it, man. Yeah, just...
It worked, though.
It was good. Hopefully.
Yeah, but no, Megan just comes off in these two back-to-back scenes like an absolute legend.
Absolutely. Knowledgeable and a good leader.
Yeah.
So then they, I believe it was Toulon, where they get into this gunfight with some machine guns on the coast. And again, just regret. I love seeing these planes in the air. I wish I had more of these combat scenes watching these fighter bombers specifically. But we lose a couple people here, and this kind of propels us into them being captured by the Germans after being shot down. Westbrook does not make it, but the three that do are going to be Daniels, Jefferson, and Macon.
Yeah. Yeah, it looked good again. Like I said, this is more of what I had been expecting. It's just... Yeah, you're right. I didn't even think of it while I was watching, but I had this, like, not necessarily weird feeling, but just something I was noticing but couldn't put words to. But you're right in that it's just what we want. I feel like I wanted more of this.
Yeah, for sure.
I didn't realize that I wanted more of this until I have this taste of it. And it's like, oh, okay, this is also very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So they do get captured by the Germans, and Macon really hurt his neck, which, you know, if you're going to be a POW. Yeah, so was I. I didn't think he was going to make it, but he does wind up making it. And the next scene we get is kind of a echo of, I think it was part 6, where Bucky is being processed by this German inquisitor, whatever you want to call it, kind of playing the good cop. And they respond in much the same way with just their name, title, and soldier ID.
Yeah, and it was, again, it's a nice... Nice maybe isn't the word, but it's this reality, this honest depiction. Because it was obviously a conversation that was ongoing of, we've mentioned like this, the lack of support, or at least lack of equal support given to African-American troops. And while this man is a Nazi and he's not to be trusted, he puts out a very, I would say, fair question of, why are you putting your life on the line for this country that clearly does not care so much about you? I mean, he brings up examples from the United States of how, you know, African-Americans are discriminated against within the country. And I thought Macon's answer was a good answer. It was I didn't expect him to say that. I thought they would just keep going with the names and their numbers and things like that. But yeah, I mean, it feels like they had to, I don't want to say they had to address this type of stuff, but it feels like this is exactly how the interrogation would have went.
Yeah, 100%. And I don't know, that even puts more respect on these people for taking part in the military and fighting for a country that does nothing but treat you poorly and disrespect you. I mean, somehow, some way, they still have that nationalistic pride and a belief in what the United States could be. So it was maybe a little bit of a cliched line, but like you said, one that probably had to be included for sure.
Yeah. Again, like, maybe not the best word, but the guy does the little magic trick on the cigarette to Jefferson, and I was just like, this fucking guy.
Trying to butter him up, I guess.
Two of I think the best characters in the show have been the two Inquisitors, just because, I don't know, they just play a funny role.
Yeah. I don't know, this guy was more of a bastard, shall we say, than the last guy that you like a lot, but... So the next scene is them arriving at the Stalag Luft 3, and, you know, they're kind of met with people saying, oh, the Red Tails are here, which also was a little, I don't know, eye-rolly, but, oh, they're legends, whatever. So,
well, there was also a little bit of the negative as well. There was people saying, you know, negative things, too, like, isn't there somewhere else for them?
Yeah.
So it was nice when they get in there and a couple guys come up to them and are like, hey, like, you know, we flew whatever, like, you guys have had our back, like, come to my bunk or whatever the term he uses is. So again, it's just so crazy that I'm sure that is actually what happened, where there's people within the military that still held on to these level of prejudice, even when they're being shown evidence that these guys are doing nothing but fighting for the same country. It's just crazy to me.
Yep. And before we keep going with that plot, why don't we just catch up with what Buck and Bucky have been up to at the Stalag? So I think the main takeaway is Bucky is not doing well in captivity. He's a peacock. You got to let him fly. And Buck is trying to be the voice of reason. You know, we could be dead, but Bucky's just kind of losing his grip. He's getting antsy and he needs something here. Kind of in the background is this stump remover that we were introduced to last episode, and Bucky's like playing air baseball with himself, and then he kind of just goes over looking for trouble, like, oh, you boys, let's play skins versus bones, and you'll be away, we'll be well, actually we're all the away team because we're in freaking Germany right now. And him and Buck get into a scrap that is only broken up when the Germans start rushing around, and Buck surmises, well, we landed in Europe. This is happening.
Yeah, I can only imagine how... I think you could understand both sides. You could see Bucky getting stir crazy. It fits with his personality. And then everyone else being pissed at him, where it's like, dude, shut the fuck up or help us. Like, there's your two options right now. Mm-hmm. Getting on our nerves type of deal. And he says he's been in there, I think he mentions 8 months at one point.
Yeah.
So... it's been a bit. They're all in very close quarters. They all probably smell like shit, feel like shit. They are eating like shit. So obviously tensions would arise. It would have been weird if there wasn't, I would say, a scene like this.
Yeah, definitely. But kind of the good news that the Allies landed will boost morale. But with that comes, okay, the Germans are going to start to get desperate. Listening on his radio, I think he just hears an update. They're at the Vistula River, which is about 450 miles away. Essentially, they're getting closer, and the one guy that we consider our brass within the prison just kind of says, okay, we're going to have to prepare for three inevitabilities. One is going to be a mass execution. Two is going to be a forced march deeper into Bavaria, essentially, or three is going to be a battle. So we got to get these boys fit, and we got to just start rationing, you know, storing stuff up and creating weapons in case we got to fight.
It was totally the naivete. And I'm thankful for the naivete that I don't have an understanding of how being a prisoner of war would work and, you know, war and things like that. But my initial take was like, oh, cool. Like, they're about to just march in here and get rescued. And then I didn't anticipate them having to, you know, plan for these scenarios and all that type of stuff. So this was compelling, especially when we get into like the scenes of them doing the nightly demonstrations and stuff.
Yeah,
they're like teaching them these skills and stuff. And yeah, it was just for me, because we get the news and I'm like, oh, okay, this is a good turn, happy turn. And they're like, oh shit, okay, this is getting real. Like, while it's good news, it's also could potentially be the worst news possible for us in the near term.
Yeah, and all the while, kind of Buck and Bucky are still talking about an escape attempt, and you're not sure if they're completely shutting it down or just saying we gotta wait for the right opportunity. The next noteworthy thing that happens is that the SS takes control of the Stalag from the relatively fair treatment of the Luftwaffe, so they are assuming that things are just going to decline in terms of quality of life here at the Stalag.
Yeah, man. I just can't imagine, especially three scenarios is a lot of scenarios. That's a lot of scenarios.
Three different scenarios. Yeah, I mean, too.
That's two more than you'd want. So,
well, I'll tell you what, mass execution is a scenario that you don't have to prepare for. That's just that mass execution, unfortunately. Yeah.
Pitch battle. Yeah. It's just, I can't imagine the psyche of these people, especially after 8 months of, not to say sitting on your ass, but you're kind of 8 months at that point, and you just now it's like, okay, shit, go time type of deal. So tough stuff.
Yeah, it's tough stuff. I don't know. Tough stuff. Tough stuff. I got nothing else. It's
yeah, not
stuff,
much else guys. To add there. Yeah. Not much else to add.
Non-ever prisoner Brian commenting on the POW system. It's tough stuff, guys.
Yeah.
All right, so now we are kind of caught up. Like we said, the Tuskegee, our three downed pilots, do make it to the Stalag, and they find themselves in Buck and Bucky's barracks, and everybody kind of looks at Buck for leadership. You know, are we cool with these guys? And he just says, welcome to paradise, boys. So he's treating them as one of the boys. Actually, so this guy, Alex Jefferson, came out with a memoir. He is a real person that was downed, caught as a POW. He said that he was treated much better in the POW camps than he was back in the United States in terms of racial discrimination, which makes sense. I don't know. I mean, when you're against captors who are different from you because it's Germans versus Americans, you know, color doesn't matter nearly as much if they're American. I don't know.
That's very interesting. I feel like I should look that book up. I want to read that. I want to say like the sandwich experience of pre-war in America, the war itself, and then what it would be like coming home after you've experienced that level of like camaraderie in an unfortunate situation. Mm-hmm. It just is very interesting. I should look that book up.
I believe it was called Red Tail Down, Red Tail Freed, Memoirs of a Fallen Tuskegee Airman, something like that. But Alexander Jefferson is the name.
I'll have to add it to my Goodreads.
Yeah. So, like I said, everybody's trying to plan an escape. Primarily our Tuskegee Airmen, the three people who are saying, nah, it won't work unless we have two white boys.
Yeah.
So they're trying to get two white guys, presumably, to dress up as Germans and pretend like they're escorting them out. And while they're talking about that, Buck and Bucky are eyeing them up like, what do you think of the new guys? Think they can help us out with our plans to escape? So everybody's scouting.
Buck says he doesn't think anything of them, which I thought was interesting. But I guess at that point, you don't really know anything about them.
Well, it's not I don't think anything of them in a bad way. It's just in a neutral way, you know, just like, oh, I don't think anything of them. Yeah. So, and that is until we get this one-on-one with Buck and Alex Jefferson. And it's, you know, it's good. Buck's there treating him as an equal for sure, showing some interest. And the German Inquisitor actually dropped that he is a, you know, college educated young man. He studied chemistry and he's telling Buck, you know, that he had an interest in model planes ever since growing up. It was nice. He just said 3-foot wingspan, the submarine Spitfire, like just seems like a cool guy. And then he hands him the book with the well-drawn hand map of kind of the compound and the surrounding grounds. And Buck says, hey, do you want to help us out? We could use some more of these maps.
Yeah. This is in combination to the first scene we get of Jeff drawing.
Mm-hmm.
Was funny as shit. We talked about it, how maybe two episodes ago, of the little bit of roles you would fall into within the POW camp, and drawing like pornographic suggestive material is a hilarious role to fall into.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I'm sure a very highly regarded role, because he's just, people are probably paying him in cigarettes and all this kind of stuff. So,
well, yeah, Macon's on the bunk smoking a cig, and it's like, yeah, you got to check them next time because these ain't shit. These ones. So it's like,
that was good. That was
just one of those bizarre social dynamics that would pop up.
That was good. I did, like I had mentioned earlier, I had a feeling that Alex, Jeff, whatever I'm going to end up calling him, and Buck would kind of get along. Buck just seems like a nice guy. And they both have that like very serious side to them. Feels like they both love to fly and they're like serious guys. You know, while Bucky obviously loves to fly too, but is a little bit of a loose cannon type of deal. So this was good.
I think Buck respects, how should I put this? I don't know, just other manly men who are respectable. He respects respectable men. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I see what you're saying.
And Alex is clearly smart, capable. He's like, hey, if you got something to offer, I'm willing to work with you.
Buck Levin, too. Well, I mean, getting the maps, that's big.
Absolutely. Then our final scene at the Stalag is going to be Buck listening on his radio, and he hears that the Russians just crossed into Germany. We have one of the SS officers kind of come in, look around, looking for any clues, signs of an uprising, and then he just says, lights out. And Buck tells his comrades, we're close. You know, they're really close.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting, and I could be putting too much stock into this, but I don't know if they were trying to comment, because they mentioned earlier when the SS took over that like there would be a lot of stuff for the SS to do, type of deal, like spreading the SS thin, having them take over all the prisoner of war camps. And I might have misinterpreted that comment. So it was interesting how they just send one guy in and he like kind of gives everyone an evil eye, looks around, and then just goes lights out. Like it just felt like a contrast to when they all got like completely pulled out of all of the cabins and everything got searched top to bottom. I don't know if it was making a comment that, or I'm just completely reading that into that way too much.
Yeah, I mean,
Because it was, I mean, they were just like passing the stuff around and whatever. Like it was.
The show has not yet done much of any of a job showing that the SS is more of a brute force presence in the Stalag than the Luftwaffe was, whether that's because they just heard that the invasion happened and the German forces are spread so thin, like in no capacity do they have the resources to really crack down within the POW camps, whatever it may be. So right now it's just, like you said, our one guy giving people the dirty eye, but yeah, ooh,
I couldn't tell.
Dirty eye.
Yeah. I can't tell if I'm a teacher trying to say the blue curtains mean he's depressed or the curtains are just blue.
Fair enough.
Yeah. I don't know.
But yeah, that is our Stalag storyline, and that should set up for, you know, one of our three inevitabilities in the finale episode.
Yeah, I'm expecting a lot out of it.
As am I. I think this show has to end with the Russians liberating them from the camp or something. Whatever. That is probably my expectation. I would like to see how that goes down. Russians freeing Americans from a POW camp.
Yeah, and it doesn't necessarily need to be this, like, fictional fairy tale ending where it's like all of these plot lines come to a head and we defeat the big bad type of deal, but it feels like it needs to be somewhat fast paced. We need to have a conclusion, all that kind of. So I'm expecting fireworks. I'm just gonna expect it, and then if I'm disappointed, I'm disappointed.
Well, fair enough. Yeah. So that's all for the Stalag. Let's rewind it back to the beginning at Thorpe Abbott. And like we said, this is going to be covering the days leading up to D-Day through the point of view of a one Mr. Crosby. And I mean, his first scenes in this episode are just saying, you know, I woke up and that was the last minute of sleep that I would get for the next 72 hours. And I really liked how this episode kind of minimized D-Day as a mammoth operation, and they kind of just shrunk it to how it would affect one person at the personal level, and that is Kroz, who is just all over the place making these maps to support 200 plus missions that were going to take place for the 100th on D-Day.
Yeah, just coffee and pills and just sheer determination, it seems like. That's what got him through all of this. I mean, what a monumental effort. It's probably a good thing that he didn't know ahead. Like, if I knew ahead of time that I was about to go 72 straight hours, I would be in a much worse mood to start. So it was also interesting how he was giving us milestones of, like, it's that second breakfast on the second day. Like, yeah, I assume the second breakfast on the second day was terrible.
The first night lies to you. It tells you it's going to be easy. The second afternoon, that's when coffee doesn't do it anymore.
I liked your take, though, with saying of it was interesting to have it shrunk down to just like what one person's experience would have been with it. It was similar to the book that I had mentioned that I was reading, the Rose Code. It's the same thing. I mean, they're like leading up to it. They know this invasion's happening. They're trying to get as much information out of all of the, you know, Nazi communications as they possibly can. So they're working triple time, double time, no one's sleeping, all that kind of stuff. So it was just interesting for me to think about just kind of the comparisons between the two things. But Kroz, man, he's a fucking machine.
He is a machine. And I mean, this is the adversity he's had to overcome, is being taken out of the plane and finding a way to contribute so that his boys get home safe. And he takes his job as a navigator making these maps very, very seriously.
Yeah, especially too, like, pulling all-nighters this consecutively for anything, I think, would be very difficult, obviously. But the added pressure of, like, thousands of lives being at stake would just, like, that extra level of emotional pressure and eventually exhaustion would be wild. And obviously, we see it, and then he falls asleep for 3 days.
Yeah. But before we get to that... Yeah. You brought up the Rose Code. We were speculating that a one Sandra Westgate might be a code breaker, but in fact, she is an out-and-out spy for the English intelligence. It is way cooler.
Not to diminish the efforts of the code breakers, but being a spy, I think, is cooler.
Yeah, and we only just get a few scenes where Kroz is trying to booty call her, but she had... she's been a busy girl, honestly. She's all over the place. And we do get to follow her into Nazi occupied Paris, where she, you know, can speak French, and she's given soldiers documents, and she's meeting up with people. So that was kind of a good conclusion to this character arc that we only thought she was going to be in that one first episode, and she has been kind of a mainstay for these past two.
Yeah, no, definitely interesting. A curveball that probably could have seen coming a little bit. I just didn't see coming because I underestimated the role she would play for sure in the show.
And she, I did read, is based off a real person named Landra Westgate, who was someone that Craws actually met. So she is mentioned in his memoirs. Craws passes out from sleep exhaustion. And then the next scene that we get is yet a new CO giving our boys the mission briefing. And I'm glad that Rosie got to inform the boys, you know, if you weren't teed off based on the massive armada being formed, we're going to be invading Europe in a couple hours.
Everyone's hype as hell.
Everyone's hype as hell, Kyle. Yeah. Everyone.
Yeah, the boys are definitely buzzing.
And the next time that we see Thorpe Abbott is Rosie waiting at Cross's bedside just reading a book. We literally slept through D-Day, which I felt a little robbed as the audience.
Yeah.
But we do have this awesome scene of Rosie in his B-17 just looking out not only the air fleet, but also just looking out into the ocean. Kroz, you wouldn't believe it, just such an assembly of ships and airships. I couldn't think of the other way. Planes is what airships are called. Ships and ships, I was about to say. I'm an idiot. So that was a very cool just picture on the screen there. I felt a little cheated that we didn't get more of the actual D-Day operation. And if I'm being honest, I felt a little cheated that we didn't get more of Rosie. He felt like a very background character in this episode, especially given that last episode ended with the mic drop where he said, "I'm not fucking leaving."
Yeah. The idea / concept of Cross sleeps through D-Day is funny, and I like that for sure. But yeah, I think the flip side of it being us not getting a ton of Rosie, and Rosie in the air being the man, I think hurts a little bit. Still nice to see him, like you're saying, take on that CEO role a little bit, where he's telling them about the mission and he's shaking their hands before they go up, and he tells the one guy, like, you know, "I don't have any last piece of advice because I'll talk to you again. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you'll have something for me." He's just the man.
But yeah,
I'm curious of like what I don't know. Obviously, we'll still be bombing, I guess, next episode, but
I'm really not sure. I mean, like we've said, the Luftwaffe has been more or less annihilated, so they control the skies pretty much unopposed. We might see some of these bombing missions on just, I don't know, Berlin, facilities and stuff, but I am expecting the Stalag storyline to play a pretty prevalent role in the finale episode. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like we said, Rosie just gives him his props, like, "Braz, it was amazing. We were unopposed in the air, and thanks to your maps, you know, the Germans had no reinforcements coming to combat the invasion force because we had taken out all the transportation, we had taken out all the bridges, etc., etc." So he's just kind of giving them his props. And this episode, in the little Rosie that we got, I was keeping an eye out for kind of his character growth from the retreat that he took. And that kind of comes full circle when Kroz gets informed that he has to take this mandatory month off.
Yeah.
And Kroz is pissed.
Yeah, it's so interesting because just as the cuddled up on my couch viewer, I'm like, dude, hell yeah, man, you get a month off, that's sick. But he, you know, is a different man than I am. So I like to, he goes, it's funny that he just goes right for the booty call.
Yeah I wanted to see Sandra one last time.
Yeah, he's like, gets right on the phone and he goes, "What's up, girl? I'm about to be in London."
Our boy.
Yeah,
well,
got them.
Yeah, she kind of pulls the football away from his feet there and leaves him a note and just says, "Hey, it's probably for the best. I got called away on duty. I'll always remember the time we spent together," which leaves Cross to go back, and he's going to do his 4 weeks in New York. He'll get to see his wife, Jean, again. And he's kind of stewing in the barracks, and he is confronted by Rosie, who tells him, "Kroz, dude, this is going to be good for you. Like, yeah, just take your time, get a beat."
But again, is his finale scenes walking around in New York, or we get a time skip where he's back? Very curious to see. No idea what that's going to be like.
Yeah, I don't even know what I want to see in this finale episode. Definitely a conclusion to the Stalag. But other than that, like, all of the other characters are in a very weird point. D-Day has already passed, so there's no definitive, like, end to where I would expect their storyline to go. I just don't really know. This penultimate episode left me in a weird place.
Yeah, and maybe it'll be, maybe, I don't know, depending on how much time they have, but is it going to turn into like a subtle commentary on like the difficulty of the transition? Maybe not like back to their civilian lives, but just kind of wrangling with the thoughts of the war's over. We don't have to do these bombing runs anymore. Like, what does that mean? Type, because we have Kroz here when he's like, what if it's not the same with his wife? And Rosie's like, well, nothing's the same type of deal. So maybe if we get a small exploration of that idea, I don't know.
Yeah. And I mean, that's our episode there. It's, yeah, I recall, Band of Brothers kind of did that trope where it's like the screen goes black and then there are a few paragraphs of like white text, like Bucky Egan went on to do this and that in the States and lived a long, prosperous life, whatever. So I'm sure about 10 that. Minutes. Yeah. Oh, so do I too. Yeah, I want closure sure. on their civilian life, but you got to figure 10 minutes will be committed to that. So, yeah, I don't know. To kind of leave it, I just feel like this show maybe a little bit ran out of gas here in the latter half of the season. I'm not really sure if that's just me. I think a lot of the community did agree that with my take that the Tuskegee is really being shoehorned in here at the end, kind of doing them a disservice in that regard. But other than that, people have been liking what they're seeing.
Yeah, that feels fair. We'll see how this finale goes. Of what level of, it doesn't feel like we're going to hit those extremes of emotion and like adrenaline that we got early on. Maybe that's just story though. Is that just how it went, you know, type of deal. So yeah, I agree. It's still been great television, but you can feel like my physical reaction to episodes is naturally less than it was in, you know, 3, 4.
I would agree.
You got to accept, I guess.
I would agree. And why don't we leave it there? That is going to be part 8, our penultimate episode of Masters of the Air. As always, if you like what you heard, give Bingetown TV a follow on Twitter and Instagram. Visit us on BingetownTV.com and subscribe to our show on Spotify, YouTube, the Apple Podcast app, or wherever else you may find your podcast. Once again, we are Bingetown TV. And thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.